Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, and with me are publisher Kevin Lundquist.
Good to be with you again, Stephen.
And managing editor Jake Shaw.
Hey, guys. Glad to be here.
All right. This week, we're going to start off because it's the first game week of the season. So let's talk a little bit about the upcoming opponent, the Southern Methodist University Mustangs. And so, Kevin, can you give me a little rundown on what the Ponies are looking like this year?
Well, before we get into them, let's just kind of talk about the excitement about the new stadium with McLean Stadium getting ready, the build-up and all the pomp and circumstance, the unveiling of the Robert Griffin III statue, that sort of thing. There's going to be a lot of excitement for it. The one thing that we keep hearing about with this stadium is the fact that it's such a vertical type of stadium that you're going to have the crowd sitting on top of you. So I expect this place to be an extremely loud building, and I think SMU will quickly find out what an intimidating place it'll be to play, and especially with a team that's as projected to have as good a season as Baylor is. So, Jake, you want to take that real quickly, just kind of giving your thoughts about the opener, and then we can get into the Mustangs here real quick.
Yeah, for sure. I like what you say about the crowd noise. Floyd Casey was not conducive to generating, sound, I guess, or just echoing the crowd. And, from everything we've heard about the construction of McLean Stadium, it's going to be the opposite. And so not only that, you're going to have a full stadium, and it's going to be, I'd say, 90-95% Baylor fans, maybe even more. So, yeah, I think the energy of the crowd probably will help the team because, sometimes you get too much adrenaline going and you can be sloppy. Maybe you got too much energy. So, I think the crowd is going to be outstanding. It's going to be a historic day for Baylor. Most people assume it's going to end with a win, but, the team definitely has to show up. So let's talk about SMU. Kevin, I know Monday they released their 2-deep. I guess what stands out to you, first and foremost about that 2-deep?
Well, a couple things. Number one is that obviously there was a quarterback battle between Anil Burcham and Matt Davis, who came over from Tyler Junior College. He was at Texas A&M at one point. And it sounded like, too, that Matt had suffered some injuries or some issues during camp, which obviously made it a little bit easier for Anil Burcham to win the job. And Neil's more of a pocket passer that June Jones wants in his run and shoot. Although I kind of get the sense this year that June will not be as traditional run and shoot with this personnel that he's got on his roster than we've seen in years past. That said, Burcham came in the last couple of games of the season in 2013 when Garrett Gilbert got hurt. Looked pretty bad against Houston, was serviceable against Central Florida. I think the dynamics of that Central Florida game though was because that thing was played during that major ice storm that hit the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so no one really played in their right character. The running back situation is a little bit interesting because their heralded freshman running back, as of this broadcast, Daniel Gresham from Fort Worth All Saints, is a bit of a question mark with his knee injury. There had been some talk that if they needed to have surgery on it, then he was going to redshirt this year. They have a couple of other running backs that are going to be a part of the mix. Zach Lyon's younger brother, Prescott, who's not nearly what his brother was when he was at SMU. He's kind of a north-south type of kid, but doesn't have much lateral movement to him. They got a kid by the name of Darius Duvall, who's a true freshman coming out of the Houston area. The other thing that kind of stands out to me, that really where this game could really tip and balance Baylor's favor pretty quickly, is the fact that they're putting a true freshman from the 2014 signing class, Evan Brown, kid out of South Lake Carolina. He's got pretty good size, about 6'2", 300 pounds, something like that. But you're putting a true freshman against a very experienced defensive line, a very athletic line that Baylor has. And that's going to really play into Baylor's favor, I would suspect. The other thing on the wide receiver front is that they announced that crew. They're going to have one of their walk-ons, a kid by the name of Steven Nelson, join that group that's led by a kid by the name of Darius Joseph out of Abilene. who's probably their most prolific pass catcher. The other guys are a little bit of a question mark. Derek Thompson's a pretty decent wide receiver, but not at this level. And then there's a kid that Baylor was looking at early a couple of years ago by the name of Jeremiah Gaines. He was from Red Oak. They were probably going to use him as a tight end or maybe slot him out or put him out the outside in a couple of positions. Defensively, I think with SMU, look at a guy by the name of Bo Barnes who's going to shift to linebacker. A kid from Houston by the name of Zelt Miner that they had originally recruited as a defensive tackle. And in fact, they won a late battle with Texas Tech to keep him, mm-hmm. and they're going to put him on the outside. Their secondary is pretty inexperienced, so I think Baylor is going to have some real advantages there, taking advantage or going after that.
Yeah, good summary, Kevin. I've been looking over their depth chart too. Everything you said stuck out to me. I think it's in Baylor's favor that Burcham is starting, and Matt Davis may not even play because I think he's not that dual threat guy. Davis will be. He's not going to break a run out of the pocket. That can give Baylor maybe some trouble with new linebackers, new nickelback. But what stood out to me more than quarterback and even a true freshman on the offensive line is that SMU is kind of like Baylor. They have a really totally new secondary coming in. Looking at their top four guys in the secondary, safeties and cornerbacks, there are six starts between the four starters, and all of them by Shaquille Randolph, I believe.
Right. Former Waco Midway product, too.
Exactly, yeah. So six starts by him, no starts previously by the cornerbacks, no starts by the other safety. So that's just like Baylor, except Baylor has a little more experience with Terrell Burt, and a guy like Ryan Stewart getting a couple starts, too, in his career. So, man, it's going to be like Baylor. SMU is in that they're gonna need their defensive line and their linebackers to make a lot of plays and force Bryce Petty to make some quick throws because if Petty has time, I think he can pick apart the secondary. And I think he will have time. Looking at the size of SMU's defensive line, I think it's a big advantage. Baylor's offensive line is much bigger, especially when they're throwing a guy like Laquan McGowan. I think he weighs the same amount as SMU's entire defensive line. So. Yeah, at the big advantage there, offensive line, and like I said, if Petty has time, he could have a big day in the secondary.
The dynamics are the same from the standpoint that you have two teams where their defensive, where their strengths are in their fronts, but their questions are in their secondary. The difference is, though, is that Baylor's playing at a Power 5 conference level, and they have such exceptional depth that they can probably cover for a secondary that's going to have to learn as it goes. Those kids, though, Ryan Stewart, Terrell Burt, and Terrence Singleton, all those kids got playing time last year, so this isn't going to be like their first walk in the woods, whereas opposed to SMU's front, while it's decent for their level, it's not at the same caliber of what Baylor's front is at, and I think that's where Baylor's front is going to have more help from their linebackers as opposed to Baylor using a traditional push from its front four because they can do that.
Okay, one of the things, for me, I think that what I really see is where SMU has problem is where Baylor has strengths. And so I think the matchups in this are not good for SMU because you look at what's Baylor's strength. Okay, defensive line. So they've got a true freshman starting on the offensive line. And so this is a new offensive line that hadn't really had time to gel. The SMU's defensive secondary is weak. What is Baylor's strength on offense? Is their passing attack. So, SMU's weaknesses play into Baylor's strengths, and I think that's one thing. And, Kevin, what you're talking about on the overall talent level, and you tell me, when I look through the roster, I'm not sure I saw any players at SMU that could start for Baylor.
Maybe a handful, but I can't see it as a whole. Maybe if Baylor wanted another running back, and maybe Gresham, the kid from All Saints, if they really wanted to pursue him, I think he probably could have fit into their system a la like what Devin Chafin or Terrence Williams are. But, once you get past most of those, once you get past about three or four, five guys, really no. And that's why this thing is probably going to get out of hand pretty quickly here. I would think somewhere in the second quarter. I mean, I could foresee SMU probably staying with Baylor for about a quarter, maybe early, maybe the first half of the second quarter. But I think for Baylor, you know, the way I look at games like this is that in order for this thing to stay interesting, close, whatever you want to call it, Baylor's going to have to help SMU in terms of turnovers, killer penalties, things like that, to shoot itself in the foot. Because otherwise, if you play this game straight up, this is a big Baylor route.
Yeah, I completely agree, Kevin, and you guys know me. I tend to be, I don't want to say more pessimistic, but I tend to sometimes maybe give an opponent too much credit sometimes. You know, I've been wanting to look for, you know, ways that SMU, not beat Baylor, but make this a really close game deep, and I just don't see it. I talked to Adam Grossbard of SMU's rival site, and we have a segment with him coming up in this podcast, but I asked him to describe SMU in one word, and he said young. That's not good against a Baylor team that I know has a lot of new starters, but still is very experienced and has some excellent leadership at the top. I don't see how this is a close game unless, like you say, Baylor helps him out. Like I said, the team doesn't come out sharp. Maybe there's an interception, a fumble, fumbling a kickoff, things like that. It's gonna take a lot of miscues by Baylor to keep SMU in this one. And that's with all due respect to SMU. I just think they're at two different levels right now. Baylor's coming off a big championship. Now, Baylor has a Big 12 championship. SMU was 5-7 last year. It's just a fact of the matter that this game should not be close if the Baylor we know shows up.
And I just think that the way that people have tried to compare the common denominator, because that, you know, Central Florida played each of those teams its last two games of the year, whereas, you know, they scored late in Dallas to win, and then of course they beat Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl. But I'm like, that's apples and oranges, because again, as I said a moment ago, that game in Dallas was played in extreme cold conditions from that big ice storm that came through. The Fiesta Bowl was played in beautiful climate conditions, temperature-controlled conditions, in Glendale. So you've got two different things there. Plus the fact, you know, we talked about Baylor's distractions in that game because of whatever else. I think the one thing that the Baylor coaches also have to be mindful of here, and Art Browse talked about this week, is making sure that everything outside of the football game doesn't become a problem within the football game. Yep. Because ultimately that's what it comes down to, is that if the players are too distracted by ceremonies, pomp and circumstance, all the other extremities that come with something like this, because this is a historic day for the university, much less the football program, if that becomes a problem, a focus issue for the team, then that could play that could work against Baylor. I don't see that happening, because I think that they've worked too hard to put themselves in a position so that it does become an issue.
Yeah, I agree. It could become an issue. I think all the coaches need to do is put on a TV screen a screenshot of the final score of the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, that's going to mm-hmm. motivate everyone out there and remind them that you know, yeah, the stadium's opening. That's pretty cool. But they have a lot to atone for in that final game of the season. And then it's a reminder that if they don't show up with their heads in it, you know, they could lose. So I don't see the distractions being a problem for this team. I think they will be pretty focused on it.
Yeah, one of the things that I see on this, I think you're right. I think if Baylor had won the Fiesta Bowl, I don't know if they'd come in with the attitude that they have. But I think they're going to come in here mad. They made a mistake in the Fiesta Bowl, and you know, overlooked Central Florida, and it's not what it should be. That game is not what it should have been, and they're going to walk in there, and I'm tired of them skip on their stuff, but they're going to walk in that stadium. Now, the other thing that I think is coming up is that it could end up being a distraction for Baylor, but I think one thing that Baylor is really aware of, that all their friends wanting to make it into the Final Four, wanting to get into the playoff, they lose to SMU, that part of their season is over.
Yeah, and it changes the whole dynamics of the season too, because if that thing were to, if the worst possible thing ever happened on Saturday, excuse me, on Sunday, to them, then that, like you said, it just completely looks 2014 looks completely different. So.
Yeah, that's the apocalypse.
Well, we do like that word on this podcast, don't we? Apocalypse, don't we?
Yeah, well, it's a Baylor side. But you know, the thing is that you have something like that. You know, that game with Michigan, where I forget who upset them, but when Michigan
Appalachian State.
Yeah, and then last year with Kansas State, you know, that's the kind of loss that people talk about 5 years later. And Baylor doesn't want that kind of loss.
No, not at all. And don't think it'll happen either, so.
Closing thoughts on Baylor. I'm thinking offensive line. Jake, you were saying you thought the offensive line might have a chance to be Baylor's best offensive line.
Yeah, I'd have to research that claim, but looking it over, you've got two excellent bookend tackles with Troy Baker, who I think will have a great comeback year, and Spencer Drango. Desmond Hilliard had a fairly solid debut last year. Blake Mir, who's probably going to start at left guard, is a 12-game starter at Hawaii and has had a redshirt year to really learn the Baylor system. And so maybe it hinges on Kyle Fuller at center. I know you've seen him up close lately, Stephen, and thinks he looks great. So, you know, if he does indeed look pretty good, this could be maybe the best line Baylor's had.
Yeah, I thought he looked good, and like I said, Troy Baker said he thinks Fuller's going to be Baylor's next great offensive lineman. And you know, Troy's played with guys that have gone in the NFL draft his whole career.
Yep.
Kevin, you had some thoughts on the secondary, Colin Brent, the guys coming up behind Colin.
Yeah.
And them.
Yeah, and before we get it, let's just make sure that we get everyone updated, too, on the injury situation, too. I mean, as far as the wide receiver Jay Lee and running back Devin Chafin, the hamstring with Jay Lee, the quad with Devin. Art Briles said this week that he does expect both of them to play, so that would be a good sign for their offense. Corey Coleman's hamstring is still a little bit of an issue. It might be a game day decision. I wouldn't expect to see Corey in this game at all. And the interesting thing is, of course, if you look at the two deep, is the fact that you got both Katie Cannon and Davian Hall running as number twos already. That speaks to not only their talent, and that wouldn't say anything about depth, but it just speaks to how talented those two are, and the fact that it's been a kind of a consistent theme that those two would get a shot to be a part of the 2014 season and not be redshirted. As far as the nickelback situation, I thought the most interesting thing was the fact that not that Colin Brent's retained the starting position, because he's a guy that Phil Bennett just loves, because he's a heady kid, may not be the most athletic, but just knows where to be at the right spot, and that's where he can kind of make up for some other athletic shortcomings. But Trevon Blanchard unseating Patrick Levels as the number two spot in that nickelback spot, because of the fact that he is so athletic and he's got such great length, about 6'2", 190, that I think that the more and more that this season presents itself, if Trevon doesn't eventually become the starter, I do expect him being a part of this defensive look more and more, with his role being more and more accentuated.
Yeah. Last thought, Chance Watts has really made a push, because I don't think when spring started anybody thought we'd be talking about him at all.
Yeah, he's caught Bennett's attention, and you know, Bennett doesn't always unsolicited just throw out guys' names. You know, usually he's pretty direct about your questions, but he has mentioned Chance without being asked about him. So, you know, that's a great sign, and he's now on the two deep at safety. You know, nobody has a strong hold on a job, not even Terrell Burt at safety. Just there's a lot of competition, so I expect to see him play along with Davion Hall and Katie Cannon, one of the handful of true freshmen who will probably see, and not because it's a blowout, but because they've earned their spot on the field.
Finally, I think Jordan Blake might be the wild card, too, on this. We'll see how that unfolds this year.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to go through recruiting, and we thought it might calm down, but it looks like some interesting things have been happening.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Okay, guys, tell me a little bit about this Rami Hamad situation. This is something kind of different that came up with Baylor.
Offensive lineman from that Baylor had originally had committed to them before the 2013 season. He wound up committing to Texas, and apparently had a falling out with the new coaching staff and Charlie Strong. Got his release earlier in the week. You know, he's taking a chance too, because the fact that he's going to be transferring within the Big 12 means that he forfeits a year of eligibility. So even though he redshirted last year, that technically would mean that he would have 4 years of eligibility had he stayed at Texas. But because the Big 12 rule states that you are forfeiting a year, he only has three. He'll sit out for 2014, play 2015, 16, 17, or have that eligibility. I think the early thinking is that he would be one of their guard options for that. And he's 6'5", 325, so you got some major size right there. And then another piece of good news, too, was the fact that Ishmael Wilson, the Texas A&M offensive line transfer, got his hardship waiver approved from the NCAA on Tuesday, so he's immediately eligible. I wouldn't think that he's not on the two deep yet, but Jake, you wanted to jump in on that.
Yeah, he's not on the two deep, and you look at the guard position, it's still pretty young. Desmond Hilliard was a, redshirt freshman last year? He's a sophomore this year. You know, you've got him, you've got Blake Muir, who has this year and next year, you've got Laquan McGowan, who's a sophomore 3 years. Now you bring in Ishmael Wilson, who's available this year. You got Rami Hamad coming in next year. That's a lot of young talent at guards. Art Briles has said before that, you know, he doesn't care what they played before or whatever. He wants his five best linemen on the field. So I could see one of those guys, maybe Muir, maybe Wilson, shifting over to right tackle in 2015 when Troy Baker graduates. But there is a wealth of talent on the interior line. It's pretty incredible the guys Baylor has on the roster at offensive line. I mean, some star-studded guys out of high school.
And one final note about the 2014 class was the Houston Belair offensive lineman Devontae Jones did not get through the NCAA clearinghouse. So I want to apologize for the correction, for the issue that we had with that. But the fact is he did not get through the clearinghouse, so he will gray shirt this year and then come on the Baylor campus in January of 2015.
Yeah, and that's not really a negative. He wasn't going to play. He misses out on going to the program this year, but ultimately, I don't think it's going to hurt his career at all when he finally does get to Baylor. Keeping with recruiting, I spoke last night to Doug Stevens. He's the head coach of Rowlett, and of course, you probably know by now, his kicker/punter, Drew Galitz, committed to Baylor. He was previously committed to Miami. At that point, he had only had a Miami offer, even though he's ranked, you know, top two or three punter and kicker in the nation. Baylor offered a few weeks ago, and his coach told me initially that, you know, he liked the offer, but it didn't really affect him. But he started thinking about playing a lot closer to home, one. And two, from what I can tell, what Coach Stevens told me, he's a pretty down-to-earth guy. He's not a guy who was looking forward to South Beach and taking his talents there, shall we say. He he wanted to stay in Texas. So he eventually changed his mind, and he's a guy who, from what I can tell, what Coach Stevens told me, what the Baylor staff told him, they expect him to come in right away and replace Spencer Roth in 2015. Baylor's taking a new approach. They used to not offer kickers and punters, but you know, this is, I think, the second or third kicker in a row that they've signed. I think it's always worth a scholarship to get a guy on here on the roster who can be a top level guy, because you see the difference when you have a bad punter or a bad kicker. It costs your game.
Yeah, they just influence field position so much, and for sure Spencer Roth has earned, has made up for the value of his efforts and his time here at Baylor. So that's if they think that highly of him, then obviously. The funny thing is, too, is that Doug had told you, too, Jake, that they actually have a second punter who's really slash kicker who's really, really good, which is kind of an unusual circumstance at the high school level when you've got two. But the fact that Drew has this kind of ability, And who knows, Baylor may look at him as a kickoff artist, too, in addition to punt. I mean, I'm sure that he's kind of got that versatility so that they can use him in both spots. So it's a great move for them. And now at 12 commitments, maybe three. If we're assuming that Baylor's going to have about 15, then you got three spots. If we're assuming that maybe they can go beyond that, no more than five more. But I've got to think that, you know, like I said, now it's just a matter of this is the way the rest of the recruiting thing is going to look like, guys, for the 2015 class. One shows up here, another shows up there, that sort of thing.
Yeah, speaking of that class, this weekend Baylor's going to have some visitors, a lot of unofficials, but also one official visit. That's Dia Meeson. He's a JUCO offensive lineman out in California. He's originally from Philadelphia. He's been really high on Baylor. He's coming this weekend. I wonder just how much he'll be blown away by the atmosphere. You know, he's coming at a time where it's going to be the best atmosphere Baylor's really ever had. So I don't think he'll commit just because he has other visits set up, but it also wouldn't surprise me just because of the, you know, he loves Baylor's pedigree with linemen. He hasn't been here before, so that's probably what's, you know, stopped him in the past of, you know, maybe pulling the trigger on a commitment. So I know he's going to be there Sunday, and it's interesting to see what happens with him after this weekend. And I know, Kevin, you know of some other guys coming on unofficial visits.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, obviously, Jared Maiden, one of the 2016 top recruits that Baylor's after. He's Baylor's on his top 10 list, the Staxi defensive back. Looks like he's come. Trying to get confirmation of Patrick Hudson from Silsby, the 2016 offensive lineman, the highest recruit ever in the history of Baylor as far as services are concerned. Trying to get that confirmed. Hopefully we'll get an answer before we get the blitz out, or when we get the blitz out on Friday. And some other 15 guys, I mean, a good number of the 15 guys should be there. I know Jordan Tolbert has talked about doing that. Chad President has talked about coming up there for Blake Lynch. Trying to see if that can make it work. Of course, this is Labor Day, so kids don't have to be in school on Monday, but of course it all kind of depends, too, on how the football coaching staffs of their respective schools are going to treat Monday with an early morning practice and a 6:30 Sunday night kickoff, that sort of thing. So just going to have to kind of treat it like it is, because let's face it, your football team comes first before running down to Waco to watch the team that you're going to be playing for. That comes first. And, of course, you know, we'll have a full, as comprehensive a list as we can possibly get for the blitz on Friday on kids. We'll start making more checks with them. The one thing I'll say about that, too, is the fact that you always kind of want to check with kids as close to the kickoff as you possibly can, because these things can flip so fast.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, sometimes it all depends on a recruit's uncle being available to drive them there or something, little exactly. that can change things. So you can have all the confirmations in the world that a kid's going to be there, and then he doesn't show up for some reason or another. But I do expect a pretty good crowd, and I assume Baylor is trying to make this a big weekend for unofficial visits, just because of there's not going to be a game this big at McLean Stadium for a while because of the Northwestern State game the next week. Then you've got the road trips coming up, so it'll be a while before they have an environment like this again. So I think it could be a really big recruiting weekend.
I could see a group of maybe 30 recruits, give or take, be on hand for that.
The only thought that I've really had is I keep looking at this thing on Rami Hamad, and it makes me think of a couple of things. Number one, right now every starting position at UT just about is up for grabs, and he's losing a year of eligibility to transfer. There's something going on down in Austin, and I don't know what it is, but something's going on in Austin, and I don't know if it's going to be great or bad for the Horns, but that is one odd transfer.
Stephen, what I think this really is, to be honest with you, is that I'm getting the sense, even though we reported saying that he had a difference of philosophy with the UT coaches, I think he had an issue with Joe Wickline, the offensive line coach there. Because remember, in his recruiting process, he originally committed to Oklahoma State when Joe Wickline was at Oklahoma State. And then he flipped to Baylor a couple months later, and then flipped to Texas in December of 2012. And so perhaps that could be it, that there's a personality conflict there. He's a guy that I think the Baylor, though, was willing to take a risk. Look, he committed to Baylor at one point during his recruiting period, he's got a relationship with that coach and stuff, which has been intact since Rami has been, you know, had his first contact with the Baylor coaching staff. We'll just have to wait and see. If he toes the line and things go well and everyone gets along, then hopefully it'll work out. If he has the same issues with the Baylor staff over time, that was apparently what happened with the UT staff, then he's not going to be in Waco for very much longer.
Yeah. My final thought on him is, yeah, if it does mesh and things work out, he wasn't going to play last year at Baylor. He was going to redshirt at Baylor in 2013. You look at the roster this year, unless there were some injuries, he wasn't going to start this year for sure, maybe a little playing time. But I don't think his career is has really been hurt by you know, having to sit out a second year. The negative is maybe losing that 1 year of eligibility, but if he comes in and has three productive years, then he's going to accomplish basically everything he wanted to in his career, and Baylor is going to get a lot out of him. So, yeah, Steven, I agree. It's just crazy to see so many guys leave, especially talented guys and guys who, some of them are not, they're not in trouble with the law. It's not like they're getting in trouble off the field. They're just not. Charlie Strong, he's laid down the law and basically, it's his way or the highway, you know. And for a lot of guys, it's been the highway. It's pretty amazing to see develop from you know, our vantage point.
Well, and that happens too, though, when you have been in an environment that was accused of being a very country club type of environment that Texas had down there. And when the country club has been shut down or foreclosed upon or whatever by the new occupant, and it's a running a tighter ship, if you will, or not coddling kids, which, of course, Mack Brown and his staff was accused of doing or speculated that they were doing, and the soft label that Texas had always had during Mack's tenure, that when you are changing philosophies and things like that, some recruits are just going to fall by the wayside. So in Rami's case, that's what's happened here, and we'll just see what happens.
Okay, and last thought for me on this, and then we'll close out the segment, is that it's something we haven't mentioned much, but I think it's making a huge thing, bringing it back to Baylor, that the stability on the Baylor coaching staff means a lot to these recruits, because the guy that's recruiting them has a real good chance of still being there. And Bryles has got that staff assembled, and he's kept them together, and I think recruits notice that.
That's a great closing point, Stephen. You're exactly right. This staff has hardly changed since Bryles got here.
And Jake, you wanted to touch on the new basketball commit too, and Jake Lindsay.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. We can talk basketball even though it is the first week of football season. Just real quickly, I've talked to Jake a couple times. Not myself. Jake Lindsay. His dad was Dennis. Started Baylor in the late '80s, early '90s. He did his first unofficial visit to Baylor about 3 weeks ago. Had a great time. At that point, he said, you know, he wanted to take some official visits, but once he got back to Utah, he's in Salt Lake where his dad's the GM of the Utah Jazz. He got back home and he thought, man, this recruiting process really isn't worth, you know, keeping it going for months and months. So he decided to pull the trigger. He loved Baylor. He grew up around it, going to games, and he's got a cousin who's going to play for Kim Mulkey's team. So just made sense for him. He's a three-star, I'd say, combo guard. Baylor's told him he can play point guard. He's really tall. And great shooter. I think this is a great signing. Not only is he a legacy, but he's a guy you know is going to be around the program for 4 years and can develop over 4 years. You know, you want some great juniors and seniors in your basketball program to get deep, and Baylor probably will get that with Jake Lindsay.
And finally, the Rivals 150 rankings for basketball just came out on Wednesday, where King McClure, the first commit to this class, is ranked number 75. And all reports that we have are that both he and DJ Hogg, of course, his situation was impacted by the fact that Tyler Davis committed to A&M, but we are still of the belief and of the knowledge that DJ Hogg will be taking his official visit to Baylor this weekend along with King McClure.
Okay, that finishes up recruiting. When we come back, we are going to have an interview with Adam Grossberg. He runs the Rivals site, PonyPride.com, and he's going to talk a little bit about what to expect from the Mustangs this year.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports is Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. This is Jake Shaw, your managing editor of SikkimSports.com. And joining me from PonyPride.com, that's SMU's franchise of Rivals.com, is Adam Grossbard. Hey, thanks for joining us, Adam.
No problem, Jake. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And one other thing about Adam, he's just a month into his role as publisher of PonyPride.com, but I can already tell by following him on Twitter that he's doing a lot of work. So if any SMU fans are listening, he's definitely worth a follow and checking out PonyPride.com. Let me jump into it, Adam.
Okay.
Kind of a philosophical question or a kind of a broad question here, but I'm going to ask you, if you had to describe SMU coming into the season with one word, you know, what would you choose to describe them with? And then, you know, why would you choose that word?
Young, or inexperienced, I guess is another way of saying that. This year's SMU team, if I'm correct, has less than 10 seniors. They expect to have 13 to 14 true freshmen playing this year, not redshirting. So it's going to be a very young team. Freshmen are going to get time at a lot of different spots, especially offensive line. And they're going to have to learn fast, especially against Baylor.
Wow, that's you know, Baylor is a small senior class as well, at least scholarship-wise. It's under 10 as well. But there's only, I think, four or five true freshmen on the two deep and none of them starting position. So, you know, having said that about SMU, is there any one or two in particular that stand out and have earned it just because they're good and not because maybe there's holes on the depth chart?
Well, there's definitely holes on the depth chart, but I think Evan Brown, of all the freshmen, has had the best camp. He's an offensive lineman out of South Lake Carroll, and he's had a really good year, good summer, that is, working for the squad. Coach Jones keeps describing him as strong and smart, and he's going to have a learning curve, but it looks like he's going to have one of the starting guard spots come Sunday.
You and I have done a Q&A for each other's site. You know, I asked you questions about SMU, and you asked me questions about Baylor. One of the questions I asked you was, you know, what the strongest unit on SMU's team is, and you actually surprised me by picking running backs. I guess tell me why you went with the running backs.
Well, I went with running back because SMU has such a diverse group of runners. You've got Prescott Lyon, who's more of a power guy and really is used for his blocking and passing situations. Kevin Pope just converted from linebacker to running back and after playing running back in high school. So he does have some experience at the position, but he's a little bit of a work in progress, but looks interesting still. Casey Nwunchi he doesn't necessarily get the chances that he probably should as a junior now from Coach Jones, but he still is an interesting back, and Darius Durrell gives them a more of a quick, shifty guy at that same spot. The reason I really picked SMU's running back, though, is the way that freshman Daniel Gresham has looked. He was really a steal for SMU after decommitting from Louisville and coming to SMU, one of the top-rated fullbacks in the country. But he might miss the season and have to redshirt with a knee injury. We're still waiting to get all the details on that. So that really does hurt SMU's running game a lot.
Yeah, that's tough to hear. Baylor's been fortunate. They've had some ding-ups and one guy lost for half the season. But for the most part, not too many bad injuries. Anything else injured for SMU coming into this game?
Well, J.R. Richardson is one of SMU's most experienced defensive backs, and he's been battling some issues with sickle cell anemia, and that's been a recurring thing for him. But there's a chance that he will play against Baylor, but the idea is that the SMU staff may have him on the sideline for 20 minutes and then send him into the locker room for 5-10 minutes just to cool down and then come back out. So it's kind of hard to tell whether or not he's actually going to play. He thinks he's going to play. He's got a lot of confidence, but it still remains to be seen.
Now, moving to the most important position in a June Jones offense, and really, frankly, any offense these days, quarterback. When we talked last week, you surprised me by saying that Neil Burcham will get the start at quarterback and not Matt Davis, the Tyler junior college transfer who's originally at Texas A&M. What can people reasonably expect from Burcham in his opener?
That's a pretty good question. He has looked pretty good in camp, very coachable. There's a couple times where he misses a read and the coach corrects him and he makes the right play the next couple times. So he's definitely developing. He's a redshirt sophomore. He got two starts at the end of last season after Garrett Gilbert got hurt. And he really struggled in the first game. I think he got sacked 5 times and threw 3 interceptions. But in the second game before Burcham himself got hurt, Burcham looked much better. He threw a touchdown, only got sacked a couple of times, and no interceptions. So he definitely improved from one game to the next. I think it was from UCF to the Houston game. And he definitely looked better there, and he's definitely developed now. He's working with a younger receiving core. Even though there are two seniors and one junior who are starting for SMU, they don't have Jeremy Johnson and Keenan Holman, who both graduated. So he's working with a bit of a depleted receiving core, but they've looked good in practice. So I think Burcham will be all right. It's just about how the offensive line's going to protect him.
Sure. And I guess, do you think June Jones will have a short leash with him if things don't go right early? Or what do you think is philosophy is as far as how much playing time Burcham gets, or if he switches to Matt Davis?
Well, I think June understands that Baylor is a very tough matchup for any quarterback making his first start as the genuine starter, not as a replacement. And Matt Davis hasn't practiced the last couple of days. I'm not sure exactly what injury that is, but because the Jones staff is very tight-lipped when it comes to injuries. But Davis has had trouble converting his knowledge of the playbook to the field. So I think for now, Burcham is pretty safe in his spot.
That's interesting. Well, you know, you say that about June Jones. Art Briles is famously not candid about injuries as well. So we're used to dealing with that.
Yeah, I guess that's a common trait of college coaches.
Yeah, it is. It is. If they don't have to tell, I don't see why they should. You know, I don't blame them. Two final questions. Baylor fans haven't seen SMU, at least against Baylor, since 2012. So just a refresher, can you kind of characterize the style of play defensively for SMU? We know about the run and shoot offensively, but just kind of remind us about how SMU plays defense.
Well, they have a 3-4 defense. The front seven is really the strongest part for SMU's defense this year. They're not a traditional blitzing defense, but I think against Baylor, they're really going to have any shot to slow down Petty and the Baylor offense, even though that's still a tall order against Baylor's offensive line. They play with 2 safeties, 2 cornerbacks, play a lot of nickel and dime, man-on-man stuff. So the defense isn't the strongest suit for SMU. It never has been, but this year, I think, if anything, the run defense will be the strongest with a very inexperienced defensive secondary.
And real quick, how do you expect, you kind of answered it, but just how do you expect the defense to either attack Baylor's offense or, I guess, just go, I mean, what do you expect to see from them? Any wrinkles, a lot of blitzes? I mean, what's kind of your feeling about that?
I think they have to blitz. The SMU secondary is not going to hold up against Bryce Petty, obviously Heisman candidate, great quarterback. The SMU defense is really going to have to try to put pressure on him. And they have a very, very athletic front seven. Bo Barnes was our starting defensive end last year, and he switched to linebacker and he won't even start at linebacker. He'll be coming off the bench. Zelt Miner, as a sophomore, has looked great at defensive end replacing Barnes, and there's still 2 defensive line starters returning in Darian Wright and Derek Wood. And Zach Wood. And they'll have a solid front three there, but they're going to definitely struggle against the Baylor offensive line. So I think they have no choice but to send 2 linebackers pretty frequently, maybe about 60% of the plays they'll have to blitz.
And final question for you. I'm not going to ask for your prediction. You might do that on your side, or I don't want to put you on the spot. But Do you have any kind of gut feeling about how this game unfolds, you know, from both perspectives? Just how do you, you know, what do you, I guess, your best gut feeling about what will come on Sunday?
I mean, anything can happen. Look at Appalachian State, Michigan, but I don't think there's any doubt that SMU's overmatched. I think SMU will probably stick in it for the first quarter, maybe quarter of a half, but I think eventually that Baylor offense is just going to be way too much for them to handle.
Well, good deal, Adam. Hey, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the Stick'em Sportscast. Remind me of your Twitter handle so people can go follow you.
It's just my name, at Adam Grossbard, GROSBARD.
Good deal. Hey, thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. When we get back, we will go around the Big 12 games for this weekend and catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sick'em Sports is Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back. We ran long in the last segment, so we're going to make a quick run through the Big 12 games this week. And this being the first week of the season, a lot of the games may end up looking like glorified scrimmages. But I'm going to ask each of you guys for picks on every game. We'll keep track of it. We're going to make a thread. Subscribers can make a prediction, and we will have a prize at the end of the season, probably a stuffed Baylor Bear. Okay. Jake, OU versus Louisiana Tech.
I've got Louisiana Tech losing to Oklahoma. Keep me on your toes there.
I'm gonna go with. I think Louisiana Tech is going to lose to Oklahoma by a lot. And
okay.
So.
All right. Going out on a ledge, Stephen. Who do you have?
I've got Louisiana Tech losing to Oklahoma by more than Kevin thinks they'll lose to Oklahoma.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, real quickly, what I want to see in this game: Trevor Knight. He struggled last year in his opener against Louisiana Monroe. Does he carry over his Sugar Bowl performance? You know, we're gonna see. Next game, K-State versus Stephen F. Austin. Kevin, who do you got?
Well, I'm sure Kansas State doesn't want this to turn out what happened last year against their FCS opponent when they lost to North Dakota State. But Stephen F. Austin isn't North Dakota State, and so I do expect the Wildcats to handle them very easily. It should be fun, though, to see Jake Waters now running this offense as the starting quarterback for that team. I think this Kansas State team is going to be interesting to watch this year.
Yeah. Stephen?
Yeah. I'm going with K-State over Stephen F. Austin. I can't imagine Stephen F. Austin being able to hang with them. I agree with you guys that what we're mostly going to be looking for in this first week is to see how the questions on these other teams pan out, not so much whether or not they win or lose this week.
Yeah.
Okay. We got Tech.
I got to make a prediction here, Stephen.
Sure.
I have Stephen F. Austin also losing. Over-under on number of Devontae Fields sacks, though, I'm going to say 1.5, and I will take the under because I like Kansas State's offensive line. Next game.
Okay, we've got Tech versus Central Arkansas.
I'll go with Texas Tech. Should be interesting. By the way, Cliff Kingsbury did say that Kenny Williams was going to start a middle linebacker for him, but did leave open the possibility that Kenny would play some running back this year. So that should be interesting to see how well he handles the two-way thing. You better be in pretty good condition if you're going to be doing that for a full 12-game season over 4 months or over 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Tech wins big in this opener at home against Central Arkansas. A decent team, well-coached, but again, their talent level not up to what Tech has.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. I picked Texas Tech. Steven, I assume you do too?
I picked Texas Tech. The one thing I think people might want to look for in this game is, does Central Arkansas score some points? Because the biggest questions for Tech are on defense this year. If they're giving up points to Central Arkansas, it could be a tough season.
Yeah.
Okay, Texas versus North Texas. Does Texas still have 22 players committed? And I'm going to go ahead, being the UT homer that I am, I'm going to go ahead and pick Texas over North Texas.
Yeah, that's risky, but I'm going to take that risk too. Although I will say, if this were 2014 Texas against 2013 North Texas, it'd be a close game. North Texas had a good team last year, but this one shouldn't be close.
No, I think it might start off a little bit rocky for Texas just because that they're it's going to be trying to get everything in place, and it's going to look a little bit choppy to start. But I do think Texas will handle North Texas eventually.
Okay, and the last of the games that we think are probably going to be blowouts for the Big 12 teams is TCU versus Samford, and that's not Stanford. It's Samford.
That's down in Alabama. So.
Samford and Sun. I think Samford falls to TCU. Curious to see what their offense looks like. Curious to see what the quarterback situation is like. It looks like Trevon Boykin and Matt Joka will both play. But, it's kind of a lousy opponent, but still interesting just to see what TCU looks like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quarterback situation should be interesting there with the Horned Frogs. Gary Patterson said, you'll know who our starting quarterback is when we run out on the field. I don't think it's going to matter. TCU should win the game pretty comfortably.
I think TCU will win the game comfortably. On the flip side, I think you want to look at, does TCU score a lot of points? If they have trouble scoring on Samford, long season for them.
Yeah.
All right. These are games that I think could be possibly competitive. Iowa State versus North Dakota State. And North Dakota State is not a bad team. What do y'all think?
Yeah, North Dakota State is not a bad team, and Iowa State is not a good team, so I think it will be close. I'm going to have to go with the power conference school and pick Iowa State. I think it would be pretty bad if for the conference and for them if they lost. I think they have enough to get the win.
I think that, remember North Dakota State, too, is changing coaches. They have changed coaches this year. They're coming off their FCS championship, I think their third straight or something like that. They've won 24 straight games, so it's an excellent program. They've embraced their football up there. It's a dominant program at their level, and Iowa State cannot afford to make any mistakes or major mistakes because they could gift wrap that game to the Bison pretty quickly.
Okay, but you're picking Iowa State, Kevin?
Yes, sir. Yep, I'm going with the Cyclones in a close one.
Okay, I'm going to go for the upset. I think North Dakota State may be able to flip them up. Yeah, Iowa State's a power conference team, but they're the filler for the power conference team right now, and they really haven't shown a whole lot. We've got Kansas versus Idle. I think this may be Kansas's biggest victory this year.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, real quickly. You know, Charlie Weiss would have preferred to open this weekend, but the fact that he lost his two top running backs to season-ending injuries – he actually said on the coach's call this week that it's actually kind of a blessing so they can kind of work things in. That team needs all the help it can get.
And now we have a couple where I think the Big 12 might be in trouble. West Virginia opens against Alabama.
Yeah, might be is putting it lightly. They're in big trouble. They weren't a good Big 12 team last year. Alabama is, from what I can remember, pretty good. So I think Bama's going to roll on this one. If they don't, then maybe West Virginia is going to be better this year, but I don't see that. I think this game is going to be very one-sided.
Yeah, it could be a nightmare for Dana Holgorsen and that crew down there just because Alabama's depth is so extraordinary that it doesn't really matter who's playing quarterback for the Tide just yet, but I just do not see West Virginia making a game of this at all.
I might give them a snowball's chance if they were playing in West Virginia. They're not playing in West Virginia. They're playing a neutral site game. But I do think that Alabama has had trouble scoring or holding down the high-scoring offenses. And so I think West Virginia will score some points on them. Okay, and we have OSU versus Florida State. Last year, I think this game would be a toss-up. This year, I'm going with Florida State. Kevin?
You know, I'm going to go with Florida State, too. Obviously, the big question for Oklahoma State is that they're playing about maybe 20 to 30 kids who are either freshmen, true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, or redshirt sophomores against a very experienced team in the reigning Heisman Trophy winner in Jameis Winston, the reigning national champions in the Noles. You know, I could see the Cowboys because they will have the crowd advantage with them. I could, or at least you would think that they would. I could see them hanging with them for a half, but not the entire game.
Yeah, I agree. Last year would have been a lot better game. Florida State stacked at every position on the field. Curious to see what Oklahoma State's all about this year, how much they've reloaded. But, yeah, Florida State wins this, I think, comfortably.
Okay, any over-under on any of the OSU fans throwing crab legs on the field?
That's a good point. I think it could happen.
I'm going a 70% chance.
All right. I think there's one last game we got to predict.
Who is that one? I forgot. Who is playing?
Baylor.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. I'm gonna go first here. I like Baylor. My score, I'm putting it down 59-20.
I'm going to go Baylor running away from SMU. Baylor 61, SMU 13.
Okay, I'm going to go Baylor 70, SMU 21. And that wraps it, and we'll catch you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Ron Nichols or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.